In every diocese I've served in, there's been a particular aspect of that diocese's life which commands public attention and respect more than any other. In Christchurch, it's the Christchurch City Mission, and there's three reasons for that. It's the biggest social service operation the Anglican Church has anywhere in this country. It's got a well-oiled publicity machine that's constantly telling the people of Christchurch all the good things it does. It doesn't embark upon any risky or controversial poverty-busting agendas. It sticks to its knitting and does pretty much what we heard in the Gospel passage today. In fact, you could call it the Charter for the City Mission. Now, the other reason why it's so popular is that in the opinion of a lot of people, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting the people in prison, this is what Christianity is all about. This is the inner core of it all. All that worship and prayer stuff is a kind of optional extra. And that's the central topic I want to address today, because what the gospel message is about judgment. The fact that God has the last word on every human life. Very unpopular topic these days. And in the preceding section of Matthew's gospel, Jesus has been talking about the judgment criteria that are applied to believers, to Christians within the life of the church. And these are, you know, parables of talents, those who did or didn't use their talents and exercise their call, or they just sat on their hands and didn't do much in their Christian walk. Now he's turning his attention to the judgment criteria for outsiders, the people who aren't in the life of the church, who have not accepted the life of the gospel yet. And here the criterion appears to be good works, doing stuff for other people, exercising a ministry of generosity and compassion. But in fact, drilling down deeper into the text, what the critics are saying to us is that in fact, the least of these are itinerant Christian missionaries, or people who are serving the gospel, or Christians proclaiming the faith in vulnerable circumstances. If unbelievers or pagans reach out to them and do them a good turn and perform an act of service for them, then they have just increased their chances in the salvation stakes. So it's about those who are good to Christians, particularly those who are active in the life of the gospel. Well, that's all very well, but what about those who never met a Christian in their life, who lived in an historical era before the gospel or the church existed, or those people who are living in what I would call submerged parts of the Atlanticist world, where not the faintest glimmer of gospel light gets in, the people who never met a Christian in our very highly secularized world? Where does that leave them? What about their chances of salvation? Well, in the 1960s, a German Jesuit called Karl Rahner thought about this a lot. He anticipated the great decline in church-going that would occur in the Western world. And he came up with what was called the concept of the anonymous Christian. There are people, he believed, who haven't heard the gospel or accepted it, but who live their lives along what he called the horizon of their possibilities. The people who live their lives with great authenticity, who are generous, compassionate and forgiving to others, who live according to the dictates of their conscience. These people, he said, have implicitly accepted the gospel. Maybe they didn't read the Maker's Manual, but somehow they picked up the script along, and this is enough. They have, as it were, said yes to God in an implicit way without even explicitly doing so. Well, Karl Rahner got a lot of flack for this, and it's been a live theological debate ever since, to which he said in self-defence, I'm talking about people who never heard a healthy and wholesome proclamation of the gospel, who haven't been given an invitation to join the life of the church. For those who have received the invitation and didn't exercise their spiritual responsibilities cannot hide in the ranks of the anonymous Christians. They are, as it were, come under judgment. Well, it's an interesting concept one way or the other. And I guess there are some Christians who would be content to say, well, those who live a good life, God will accept them. That's as simple as that. And if you're one of those who believe that, or go along with the idea of anonymous Christianity, I want to leave you with two questions and two thoughts. And the questions are, what is love? And what is it to be a human? What's our definition of healthy and fulfilled human life. First of all, on the subject of love. Now, most people in our secularized culture believe that love's a self-evident experiential reality. We all know what being loving is all about. But Christianity says something different. It's not about having a warm cuddle and watching a rosy sunset. It's about laying down your life for your friends. The Gospels redefined love in a much more testing, rigorous and generous way. And if we ask, what is it to be a human being? Then Christians would say, look at the historical life of Jesus of Nazareth. Here we see the measure of what a human life is that's truly fulfilled, that's truly kind of fleshed out and filled out the contours of our being. He sets the gold standard for what it is to be a human being. And if the image, the ideal of Christ is not there in a culture or a society, then what we begin to get are distorted views of humanity, which is what's happening in our culture now. And Rana said, you know, there's a possibility that we may be human beings may be evolving backwards, that as the religious instinct dies out in the generality of our culture, as people do not turn to their creator more and more, the possibility is that we're losing the definition, the stature of what a human being is as we lose Jesus Christ. And we lose the definition of what true love is. And that's why it matters that there's a flourishing Christian community in each city, hopefully in each sizable human community. Because that community proclaims the message of what love is and sets the standard of Jesus Christ's quality mark of humanity. It keeps those ideals alive through the culture, through that community, in that place, even if only a small number of people are actually there Sunday by Sunday. And that's why flourishing Christian communities who are spreading the good news matter. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.